kind of pranks. This one time, on Mischief Night, we broke into the cafeteria after hours and stole a box of 500 frozen chicken fingers and superglued them onto the statue of our school's founder. The whole next day, Halloween, obviously, he looked like he was getting eaten alive by birds. For Amelia, there is no relief in being let off the hook. Rather, she is desperate to explain herself. Taking ice cream wasn't some juvenile stunt. They did it because the stand meant so much to them. They had only wanted to say goodbye. She struggles to say as much, but Grady waves her off. For real, though, I'm hoping one of you girls has a key to the stand. I haven't been able to find one at the farmhouse.
I do. I don't have it with me right now, but I could run home and get it. I don't live far.
Grady seems to consider this, until he spots his mom and dad climbing into a black Mercedes. We have to get back to our hotel. Can you drop by the stand tomorrow?
Of course. Absolutely.
Great. Let's say 11 o'clock.
Grady types this into his phone, returns it to the inner breast pocket of his suit jacket, and walks away. As an afterthought, he looks back and adds,
Thanks.
Kate pulls up to the corner in her pickup truck.
Who was that?
She asks as Amelia climbs in.
And you'll have to speak up because I've suffered permanent hearing loss from 4 back-to-back children's birthday parties.
Amelia watches Grady slip into the black Mercedes. He's a relative of Molly Mead, her brother's grandson.
What? No way!
Kate cranes her neck to see him better.
Yes, way. Amelia rubs her temples. They were the ones up at her house that night. And, by the way, he totally knows we broke in.
Eek.
He wants me to show up at the stand tomorrow and give him my key.
Why are you bummed? He's cute.
Amelia slumps in her seat. The idea that anyone would think badly of her is one thing. The reality that a descendant of Molly Mead thinks she would do something as disrespectful as stealing ice cream from a dead woman's stand is almost too much to bear.
Do you think that's all he wants? For me to return the key?
Kate shrugs.
I mean, I guess there's a chance he could ask you out. But it's not like he lives around here, does he? So what would be the point?
She checks her mirrors and drives off.
Is that what you were thinking?
It wasn't. But the truth, that Amelia was hoping there might still be a chance for the ice cream stand, feels too embarrassing to admit.
Chapter 10.
Amelia barely sleeps. By morning, she's trying to focus on the one silver lining in this terrible misunderstanding, that Molly Mead has family who will take care of her estate now that she's gone, that she wasn't as alone as everyone in Sand Lake assumed. Amelia is still mortified by what Grady must think of her and the girls for doing what they did, stealing ice cream from his great aunt. Though, thankfully, he was cool about it, she feels their actions have tarnished the entire stand girl legacy, made them appear childish, immature. In this way, handing over her key to Grady almost feels like an appropriate penance. She pours herself a bowl of Cap'n Crunch, and though she should be looking over the materials from the bank before tomorrow's interview, she instead turns on the small flat screen on the kitchen counter. She loves watching game shows. Her secret talent is guessing the prices of supermarket items, and breakfast cereal is her specialty. It's always more expensive than contestants assume it'll be. She's leaning against the counter, watching as a man celebrates winning his and hers jet skis when her phone buzzes with a text from her dad.
Did you see the big news in today's paper?
Dad starts every day by reading the Sand Lake Ledger, even though it's barely a real newspaper and doesn't offer much beyond high school sports scores, garage sale listings, and the local police blotter. Amelia spots it on the kitchen table,
exactly where he left the copy with Molly's obituary for her a couple of days ago. She carries her cereal bowl over. The newspaper is unfolded to a huge color photograph taking up the front page. It's of Grady Mead, smiling broadly in front of the Mead Creamery stand, hands clasped behind his back, feet spread shoulder-width apart. He's wearing the same deep blue suit he had on at the funeral yesterday, but his tie has been loosened, his pants rolled up just above his ankles, and he's changed out of his wingtips and into a pair of black Adidas soccer flats. His sunglasses are off. His eyes are as blue as the sky. The headline reads, "Young Entrepreneur to Take Over Local Family Business." The spoon slips from Amelia's hand and plunks into her bowl. Splatters of milk pucker the page. Grady Mead, 19, is currently a sophomore business major at Truman University. His original plan for the summer had been to backpack across Europe with his fraternity brothers on an unlimited rail pass. When he discovered that Molly Mead had left him the Mead Creamery ice cream stand in her will, he decided the chance to put his education to use in Sand Lake was too valuable an experience to pass up. Amelia lowers herself into her seat, blinking in disbelief. Molly Mead left her ice cream stand, her all-girl ice cream stand, to a boy? It's an incredible learning opportunity. Better than a traditional internship, where you're just watching from the sidelines. I'll put the skills I've been learning at Truman into practice. While the last few days have been something of a whirlwind for this Chicago native, one thing that didn't surprise Grady Mead was to learn that the Mead Creamery ice cream stand is a fixture in this lakes region, and he is keen to continue the legacy his great-aunt saw fit to entrust him with. Both my father and his father before him have been extraordinarily successful businessmen. Seeing what my great-aunt Molly has built only reinforces that the Meads are born entrepreneurs. Mr. Mead is currently thinking of ways to bring the legendary ice cream stand into the 21st century. Obviously, social media is huge right now, and so I'd like to create an online identity where consumers can connect with the stand. One modern problem he claims to have solved already? For the first time, Mead Creamery will be a gender-diverse workplace. And, of course, there's the question that will be front and center in the minds of his customers. Will the ice cream taste as good? To this query, Mr. Mead simply grins.
I'm well aware that my great-aunt's recipes are the most valuable thing I've inherited.
Mead Creamery will reopen this Tuesday. Amelia reads the last line twice more before it sinks in. Tuesday is tomorrow. She takes a photo of the article and texts it to Kate, who's well into her shift at Jump Zone. Amelia's phone rings a minute later. Kate says, her voice competing with the screams of children in the background, "Well, clearly Molly lost her mind there at the end. Do you think?" Amelia is less sure. Remembering the note Molly left for her in the office, the state of the stand, she appeared completely on top of things. Why else would she hand over her business to a boy? Who knows? But this could mean we have our jobs back, right? Unless Grady plans to use the stand as a satellite fraternity house. Invite his bros down to Sand Lake for the summer. Kate chuckles at the thought of this. They could change the motto to, "Ice cream so sweet you won't cheat on your girlfriend."
It's been hard enough for Amelia to come to terms with Mead Creamery closing for good. Her heart squeezes at the thought of the stand running without her or the other girls. The article says his friends went to Europe. It's got to be us.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm just surprised you sound so excited about it.
Why?
Because, sure, we're likely to get our jobs back, but in what capacity? Are you still going to be head girl?
I don't know.
Here's what you should do. Tell Grady Mead that the only way you're coming back to work is if you're still the head girl. Nothing less.
Amelia blinks. It's easy to imagine Kate doing that. But could she?
Wistfully, Kate says, I wish I could go meet him with you, but another birthday party just came in.
I wish you could too.
Just remember that you have the power. If Grady wants to open for business tomorrow, then he needs us more than we need him.
Amelia nods to herself. Yes, totally true.
So quit thinking of this as some job interview where you need to prove that you should be head girl. Amelia, you already got the job. Think of this as Grady's chance to impress you. Feel him out. See if you think he'll be a good boss. If not, then I say forget it. Because it'll suck way worse to be a part of the downfall of Mead Creamery than it will be to walk away.
Normally, Amelia would roll out of bed and put on a pair of cutoffs and a tank top to run over to the stand when she wasn't officially working. But she decides she should look more presentable. She showers and opts for a floral romper and her tan leather sandals. Before heading over, Amelia takes the stand key from her jewelry box and slips it into her white saddlebag. For a second or two, her eyes linger on the flower pin. She kisses it for luck. Chapter 11. Amelia doesn't expect to find the ice cream stand ready for opening day, because how would Grady know all the things he'd need to do? But as she climbs off her bike, it makes her uncomfortable to see Mead Creamery so not ready. The lawn hasn't been cut. There are dandelions growing out of every crack in the blacktop. The picnic tables are missing. The trash cans, too. Kate is right. Grady does need them more than they need Grady, at least in the short term. But the idea of walking away from Mead Creamery, watching Grady stumble from afar as he tries his best on his own, makes her feel even worse. She pulls the weeds she passes and flings them toward the woods, and then crouches down to look at the pile of things people have been leaving in honor of Molly Mead. Flowers, some bought, some clipped from gardens, handwritten notes and condolence cards. The impromptu shrine cloaks her in a velvety warmth. She picks up a crayon drawing, obviously made by a child, of a frowning ice cream cone crying two streams of blue tears.
That might be the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Amelia looks up. Grady is standing behind her, an empty cardboard box in his hands. When their eyes meet, he seems the littlest bit confused.
It's Amelia, she says, reintroducing herself as she rises to her feet. Amelia Van Hagen.
I remember your name, Amelia. It's just...
He momentarily trails off, his eyes trying to untangle something about her, as if she'd been wearing a disguise at the funeral.
My little cousin always wears her hair braided, the same way yours was yesterday. You look older with it down.
Amelia touches her hair, threading some of it behind her ear. It's still damp from her shower. He stares at her for a beat too long, and then he clears his throat awkwardly.
Let me grab the last of this stuff.
He bends down and begins putting the items into the box, equally careful with each object.
A bunch of flowers, a photograph. He picks up a teddy bear and pats away some dirt from its fur.
This is already my third box. People keep coming.
Amelia is touched that so many have shown up for the stand and for Molly in this way, especially after the somewhat anemic turnout at her memorial service. Molly was clearly beloved. Amelia bends to pick up a photograph. It's of a family of five lined up in front of the ice cream stand, big to little, with each one holding a corresponding serving of ice cream. The dad has a waffle cone with three scoops, the tallest thing on the menu. The toddler has a kid's cup. This place means a lot to a lot of people,
Amelia says, passing it to Grady. Grady takes a good long look before placing it in the box.
I'm planning to go through everything when things calm down. Maybe even frame a few things.
Amelia smiles. As far as first impressions go, Grady is off to a very good start. While Grady continues his task, Amelia discreetly observes him. He's wearing a button-up chambray shirt with the sleeves rolled to his elbows. His dark, fitted jeans are folded in big cuffs to his calves, and he has white canvas sneakers on his feet, bright white as if they just came out of the box, and no socks, though he's got a significant tan line around his ankles. Grady is handsome for sure, but Amelia tells herself she's intrigued mostly because boys do not dress like him in Sand Lake. Boys here wear their jeans loose. They only put on button-ups for church or school dances. They prefer boots, but if they do wear sneakers, they're dirty from a pickup game of football or a hike or a ride on a quad. Though it's not as if Grady comes across as any less masculine. If anything, he seems almost more self-assured. When the last of the mementos are boxed up, Amelia follows Grady around the stand to the door. The other two boxes are stacked there, along with a messenger bag, which Grady hoists over his shoulder. Meanwhile, Amelia takes the key out of her purse. This might be the first time a boy has ever stepped inside Mead Creamery, she says, smiling over her shoulder as she opens the padlock. Actually, I've been in plenty of times before. I spent a whole summer in Sand Lake when I was a kid. Amelia blanches as she follows him inside. Wait, seriously? He doesn't hear her. He's spinning in a slow circle, taking everything in.
Wow, this place hasn't changed, like, at all.
You say it like it's a bad thing. Grady steps over to the punch clock, checks the time against his cell phone, and pats the top of it, as if the machine were a small dog that had just performed an adorable little trick for him.
Not at all. Nostalgia is a huge part of the Mead Creamery brand identity.
Brand identity, she repeats. Amelia has never thought of Mead Creamery as a brand, but maybe it is. Amelia looks around, too, noticing the work that will need to be done to get the stand ready for customers. The cleaning she did on the day she found Molly is barely a leg up. The topping sideboard is empty, the scooping cabinet is unplugged, no paper cups unwrapped and stacked by size, no napkin dispensers filled, no waffle batter mixed up. Grady moves into the office, rounds the desk, and sits down. Even though Grady says that he's been here before, the sight of a boy inside the stand is very strange to Amelia. And to see one behind the head girl's desk is completely bizarre. He takes several copies of the Sand Lake Ledger out of his messenger bag and fans them across the desk.
Did you happen to see the newspaper this morning?
I did. I was surprised that you're planning to open tomorrow. That's very ambitious. Though Amelia has tried to say it like it might not be a compliment, Grady grins.
The reporter wanted a quick human interest story on the stuff people have been leaving at the stand, but once I introduced myself and explained how I'll be taking over the business, it turned into free front-page advertising.
Grady takes out his laptop and connects it to his phone with a white cord. He taps the space bar and a bluish glow brightens his face.
Just give me a quick sec to answer an email from my advisor, and we'll get to talking.
Sure. Amelia lowers herself into a seat that has not been offered to her. She makes sure to sit tall, folds her hands in her lap. As he types, he explains,
I'm trying to get Truman to pony up some internship or independent study credits for the work I'll be doing here this summer.
He groans like this has been a hassle.
Truman likes to push kids toward alumni Fortune 500 companies, but those places don't let you actually do anything.
Just sit in on board meetings, shake a bunch of hands, eat steak lunches, and make contacts.
But here, I've got the chance to really get my hands dirty, see what I'm capable of, bring what I've learned in the classroom to the real world.
He eyes her, looking to see her reaction. Coolly, Amelia smooths her shorts, but inside, she is lit up with the sudden understanding, one she learned how to recognize from the older stand girls, that Grady is trying to impress her. After hitting send with a bit of a flourish, Grady closes his laptop and slides it off to the side. He takes a legal pad out of his messenger bag and searches in the smaller pockets for something to write with. She stops herself from telling Grady to check the top desk drawer because of the tube of oxy and the collapsible selfie stick that are mixed in with the pencils and pens. And she tightens, remembering other girly things hidden around the office, like the tampons of varying absorbencies in the bottom drawer of their filing cabinet, the heating pad for cramps, and the PMS tea, and, dear God, the box of condoms donated by Heather, who preached that girls shouldn't ever depend on a guy to bring protection, filling one whole cubby of the credenza. The space is more like a shared bathroom for a family of sisters than it is a traditional office, because they never imagined that a boy might be in here. Grady says, "Aha!" and, to Amelia's great relief, pulls a pen from his bag. Leaning back in his chair, he clicks the top of it rapid-fire.
"So, Amelia, I'll get right to it. I'd like to officially offer you, and the rest of the girls, your jobs at Mead Creamery back."
Amelia tries to channel her best Kate and not look too eager, but she is very, very happy and relieved to hear Grady finally say this. "Thank you."
"Tell me, how many other scoopers are there, besides yourself?"
Amelia feels her smile slip, and it takes a few blinks before she can force it back on her face. She doesn't think Grady meant it condescendingly. And scoopers are essentially what the girls are. Still, there's something flip about the term. "We typically have 10 employees each summer," Amelia answers. She decides to say employees instead of girls, even though they've only ever been girls. The Mead Creamery girls. Grady writes a number 10 down at the top of the page.
"Great. And how much do scoopers get paid?"
There he goes again with scooper. Is he doing it on purpose, Amelia wonders, to make her feel insignificant? She lifts her chin as high as Grady's. $15 an hour.
"You're kidding me. That's like twice minimum wage."
Grady's mouth opens, then shuts, then opens again.
"You're telling me that you girls make $15 an hour for a high school summer job making sundaes."
Amelia feels herself begin to sweat. "I'm not sure if this falls under brand identity, but our customers expect a certain level of service when they come to Mead Creamery. The girls who work here are the nicest in Sand Lake. They are dependable, too. It's rare for anyone to call out sick. We've had several honor students over the years. In fact, my friend Kate is going to Truman this fall on scholarship. Monsi, who will be a junior next year, was just named editor of the high school newspaper. Liz does student government, and Brittany started varsity on the girls' basketball team, even as a freshman. Bernadette..."
"These are the same girls who broke in here with you, right? Who stole ice cream?"
Grady doesn't sound put off so much as like he's trying to find a position from which to negotiate with her. Amelia stiffens. She knows she needs to counter somehow, take a little power back. "Also, you should know that your great aunt promoted me to head girl at the end of last summer. That's what we call the manager," she clarifies, hating that it sounds childish. "Head girl gets $17 an hour, and I will personally vouch for every single girl on our staff." Grady looks at her suspiciously.
"What is head girl in charge of, exactly?"
Amelia takes a deep breath. Well, head girl processes payroll, tallies shift receipts and prepares bank deposits, evaluates the newbie applications and does the interviewing, hiring, and training. Head girl also is the stock manager, makes the weekly schedule.
Talk to me about the schedule. How many girls on a shift?
He fires off the question like this is an oral pop quiz. That depends. On weekdays, 3 girls can typically handle the first shift. Weeknights, things get busier, so normally we have 4 girls on. That way there's 1 girl for each of the 2 windows, 1 can focus on making waffle cones, and 1 can float, stocking supplies, emptying the trash cans, cleaning. On weekends, we put 4 girls on both shifts. Unless it rains. If it rains, we can get away with 2. She taps her chin with her finger. There are other factors to consider, and those change every week, like when summer school is in session, the Little League schedule, holidays. Amelia takes a breath, surprising even herself by how long she's gone on, considering she's never made a single schedule before. These are things she's picked up over the years, watching and learning from the older girls. She knows a lot, and she can hardly hide her smile.
Let's talk ice cream, he says, his voice low and conspiratorial.
What do you want to know? She replies, ready to spout off prices, rank flavors, and toppings for him in terms of sales, the average number of scoops in a 3-gallon drum. Before Grady can ask a follow-up, there's a knock at the office door. Grady looks up and Amelia turns in her chair. Grady's mom pokes her head inside. She's in a pale blue tunic with little mirrors and beads stitched to the collar, black capri leggings and gold leather flip-flops, with an armful of gold bangles and a huge black leather purse hanging from the crook of her elbow.
Sorry to interrupt your meeting, but we're leaving for the airport, sweetie. Come say goodbye.
Grady takes a deep breath once his mother leaves. To Amelia, he says quickly,
Fine, I'll pay the girls $15 an hour. It's utterly ridiculous, but whatever.
He stands up, checks his reflection in the mirror on the stand door.
But I'm the manager of Mead Creamery moving forward, Amelia. I hope that's not a deal-breaker for you working here this summer, though I'll understand if it is. I'll give you a minute to think it over.
He grabs 2 Sand Lake ledgers from the top of the stack and hustles out the door. Amelia whittles down her pinky nail with her teeth. It would be a deal-breaker for Kate, absolutely. She would walk away from this place with 0 regrets. But can Amelia? One thing she knows for sure. It's now or never. Springing into action, she leaps out of her chair and flies around the room. Her purse is small, but she manages to stuff all the condoms and tampons inside. The PMS tea will have to stay, though she takes the tea bags out and buries the box, along with the oxy, underneath some paper towels in the trash can.
Did either of you see this at the hotel?
Comes Grady's muffled voice through the stand walls.
I bought extra copies just in case.
Amelia goes to the window and moves the curtain just enough to see outside. Grady, his father, and his mother stand around a black Mercedes with tinted windows, the same one that was parked outside the church. The engine is running. Grady's dad is handsome, too. He's tall like his son, fit and clean-shaven. His hair is cut short. The white bits at his temples sparkle in the sun, like the gold buttons on his navy blazer. His posture is stiff, his blue and white check button-up crisp, and his black driving moccasins buttery soft. Grady's mom reads the newspaper article out loud, pausing at the end of every paragraph to smile proudly. Meanwhile, Grady's dad pops the trunk, pulls out one of those huge European travel backpacks, and drops it on the grass. Then he takes out his phone and scrolls until Grady's mom finishes reading. It makes Amelia's stomach hurt. Grady kisses his mom on the cheek, walks over and stiffly shakes his dad's hand, then steps back as they each open their doors. His father takes one last long look up at the farmhouse before he climbs into the driver's seat.
Grady waves until they pull onto the road and the car disappears. Amelia hustles back to her seat and opens one of the newspapers, just beating Grady, who returns with his backpack on his shoulder. He sets it down near the door with a thud. Your parents aren't staying here with you?
No, they're going back to Chicago, and then on to New Zealand for some golfing trip for my dad. This is the one vacation he'll take all year.
Pointing at his backpack, she says, And you gave up a Europe trip with your friends to stay here and run the stand. There's something admirable about this decision that Amelia glossed over when she first read the article this morning. This place must be important to him to pass on something like that.
Yeah, basically.
But is it important enough to Amelia for her to give up head girl? Grady crashes into the seat behind the desk and glances down at his legal pad, spinning the pen between his fingers like a mini baton. He lets out a tired sigh.
I'll make you a deal, Amelia. If you can promise we'll be ready to open by tomorrow, you can continue as head girl.
Really?
I'm counting on you to convince the other girls to come back. We'll need all hands on deck. My newspaper interview is going to make for a huge opening day.
Amelia doesn't tell Grady that the lines on opening day always reach the road, even if it rains. And she doesn't say that it's going to be almost impossible to get everything done in one morning, when it usually takes the girls 2 full days to set up. Instead, she promises him from the bottom of her heart, I will do my very best. Chapter 12. Jump Zone is in the same shopping plaza as the Walmart, along with a McDonald's, a Five Below, and the 10-screen movie theater. Jump Zone used to be something else, but Amelia can't remember what. Maybe a Staples? She knows for sure, though, that it's much hotter out here than where Mead Creamery is. The blacktop amplifies the heat tenfold. She locks her bike to the rack outside Walmart, then dances her way through customers perusing items set out on the sidewalk. Huge backyard grills, boxes of foam pool noodles, bags of potting soil, and plastic lawn chairs stacked higher than her head. Other people's definition of summer essentials. Jump Zone's storefront has floor-to-ceiling windows that are painted with images of balloons, a pyramid of presents, and an enormous cartoony birthday cake. The cake has been drawn with arms and legs, but no face, and Amelia finds this slightly unsettling. Huge, colorful letters spell out, Jump Zone Birthday Parties. Book yours today. In a font best described as friendly graffiti. The lobby is practically a video arcade with 10 or so coin-operated games blinking and flashing. Farther back, Amelia sees basketball free throw machines, a whack-a-mole station, an air hockey table, and a few of those scammy claw cranes filled with off-brand stuffed animals. Kids run from machine to machine, banging on the buttons of games they haven't paid to play. Their parents sit on couches in the corner, tapping on their phones. There's a whiteboard next to them on an easel, and a boy in a Jump Zone t-shirt and soccer shorts erases Millie and 11 a.m. from Happy Birthday Millie 11 a.m. and replaces it with Daniel and 12 p.m. before returning to the front desk where Amelia now stands.
Welcome to Jump Zone! Which party are you with?
Amelia shakes her head.
I'm looking for Kate.
Faith?
The boy glances at his clipboard and checks the clock on the wall behind him.
Faith's party started at 10, so her group should be just about ready to head into the pizza room.
Not Faith. Kate.
Amelia speaks more loudly this time. The boy pulls something out of his ear, an orange foam plug.
Sorry, did you say Kate?
Yes, long blonde hair. She just started working here.
Kate,
he says, drawing out the A sound, and Amelia knows it has clicked because of the bashful look suddenly on his face.
Cool, cool. Here you go.
He pushes a paper and pen toward her.
Sign this, put your shoes in an open cubby, enter there, and hang a left.
The boy then points toward two large doors underneath a sign that says, Get your jump on.
She's working the moat.
Oh, I'm not going to jump. I just need, like, 2 seconds to talk to her.
Everyone who enters jump zone needs to sign a waiver, the boy says, his voice monotone.
He must say that a lot, Amelia thinks sympathetically, the same way she's always telling tourists that the stand doesn't accept credit cards. The boy pushes the earplug back inside his ear. Amelia squints to read the fine print, but she's too excited about giving Kate the good news. She scribbles a quick signature, slips off her sandals, and heads inside. The noise in the next room is far worse than in the lobby. It sounds like the belly of an airplane. In a space that's maybe half the size of a high school gym, there are several massive inflatables, each with an industrial fan whirling full speed. Each one has a jump zone employee assigned to it. Amelia passes a classic mesh-sided bounce house, a huge slide, and an obstacle course where kids try to knock each other down by swinging inflatable punching bags. And then, taking up an entire wall, is the biggest inflatable of all. Amelia assumes it must be the moat. The moat is an enormous ball pit with a platform on either side. Kate is standing on the right, and a very tall guy with freshly buzzed peach fuzz is on the left. Amelia's dad wears his hair the same way, as he has his entire life. It's the kind of style that doesn't ever seem to go out of fashion for the men of Sand Lake. The guy is helping kids, one by one, climb up onto his platform. At Kate's direction, each kid takes a running jump and dives elaborately into the pit. On the other side, Kate holds up what look like homemade scorecards to rate the jumps from 1 to 10. Every girl scores a 10. The harder a boy tries to impress Kate, the lower the score she gives him. And the kids love it. This is Kate. Kate has the magical ability to make fun wherever she goes, even at a crappy job like Jump Zone. She brings that energy. She always has. And with all the work that we'll need to get done tomorrow before opening, Amelia knows that Kate's presence at the stand will be essential.
I lost my shoe,
one of the girls complains, climbing out. Nodding, Kate cups her hands and says,
Jordan?
Ugh, again?
Yup, she thinks it's over here somewhere,
Kate tells him, pointing to her half of the ball pit. But Jordan is the one to jump in, and even if he's a little put out, he does a swan dive to make Kate laugh, which she does, and she also claps when he resurfaces, a pink high top in hand. Another door opens off to the side, and a jump zone employee, this one a girl, blows a whistle.
Okay, everyone here for Faith's birthday, come on into the pizza room!
The kids and their parents empty out, but Amelia hangs back. Jordan tries to pull Kate into the ball pit with him, but she squeals and throws colorful plastic balls at his head. The girl who announced that it's pizza time flings a pizza crust at them before disappearing behind the closing door. Except for the fans, it becomes quiet. Amelia hears Kate and Jordan talking as she gets closer. Jordan says, laughing,
You robbed that one kid. A 2 for a double backflip?
La-dee-da, Kate says, and then fakes a yawn. That was nothing compared to the girl who did that flying karate kick.
She was amazing, Jordan concedes. We should have given her a prize.
Wait, I want a prize, Kate whines. I spent my entire break plus $5 in quarters trying to win that warped-looking Care Bear knockoff in the claw machine.
What would you say if I told you I have the key to the claw machine? I can open it up and get you that ugly-ass bear right now.
Seriously? Kate shrieks. She's about to climb down the ladder when she spots Amelia.
Hi, Amelia says awkwardly. She didn't want to seem like she was eavesdropping, but also didn't want to interrupt their conversation.
Hi, Kate says back, hopping down and giving her a big hug. Jordan, this is my best friend, Amelia. I told you about her.
Hi,
he says, climbing down after them. He looks embarrassed, likely because he was caught flirting. Kate playfully asks Jordan, I thought you were going to get me my bear. He talks while he walks backward.
Okay, okay, but if I get fired...
Don't worry, I'm employee of the month, remember? I'll put in a good word for you with Lou.
He's cute, Amelia says, stepping closer to Kate.
I mean, he's nice, but he's a little Donnersville, Kate says, referring to two towns over, a place with more farms where boys get their permits to drive tractors. She scratches an itch on the back of her arm.
That said, it's kind of fun working with boys for a change. Flirting makes the time pass way faster.
Her eyes suddenly widen. God, I'm so sorry, Amelia. I should be asking you how it went with Grady.
Wait, you're already employee of the month? Have you even worked here a full week?
As ridiculous as this seems, Amelia finds it unsurprising. Kate wrinkles her nose.
Long story, but you go. Tell me everything.
Okay. Amelia has trouble containing her excitement.
Kate, it went amazing. I did exactly what you said. I was confident, I was assertive, I got everything I asked for. And the crazy thing is, I walked out of there feeling like I know way more about being head girl than I ever thought I did. For the first time, I believe I can do this. And I have you to thank for it.
Kate smiles. So, what's Grady like? Because I got to be honest, I reread that article during my break, and I'm worried he's going to ride our asses all summer.
I didn't get that impression, exactly. He's definitely taking it seriously.
Kate frowns.
That's what I mean. I'm kind of loving how chill it is here. Truman is going to be stressful enough. It's sort of nice to not work super hard.
She lets out a long exhale.
I just want to have fun this summer.
Amelia swallows. What would she do if Kate didn't come back? Could she manage the stand, manage Grady, on her own?
It'll still be fun, Amelia says. It'll be me and you. Remember, I make the schedule, so we'll always get to work together.
I know, Kate says, not exactly sold.
Oh, and speaking of Truman, Kate... You should have seen his eyes light up when I told Grady you were going on scholarship.
At this, Kate flushes, and even though her conversation with Grady didn't exactly happen like this, it strikes Amelia that Grady and Kate will probably get along famously. Both are driven and smart. In a brain fast forward, she imagines them meeting, falling in love, getting engaged after they both graduate, serving home sweet home at their wedding, their very cute baby in a little Truman onesie. Kate examines her manicure, indifferent.
I guess it would be cool to be friends with someone before I even get to campus.
Exactly. And though Amelia is glad she can see things shifting in her favor, it also dawns on her that Kate doesn't have any hesitation at all about leaving Sand Lake for Truman. Not like she does. Jordan returns with a teddy bear. It is absolutely terrifying, with an off-kilter eye and cheap fur that makes it seem like it has a kind of stuffed animal mange. Jordan hands it to Kate, who doubles over laughing. Then Jordan says,
I think you dropped something, Amelia.
He bends down and picks up a red wrapper. Kate gasps.
Is that a condom?
Startled, Amelia looks down and sees that her purse has unzipped. As she takes it off her shoulder, a bunch more tampons and condoms spring out and onto the floor like a weird drugstore pinata. Of course, Kate makes Amelia tell them both the story, and soon the three of them are in hysterics. I love that you thought to do that, Kate says. Protect our honor. She turns to Jordan and says, This is why I love her. And then she breaks the news to him that she is quitting Jump Zone and going back to Mead Creamery. Jordan looks sad, legitimately bummed to be losing Kate. Amelia, of course, doesn't blame him. Kate tells him that the next time he comes to Mead Creamery, she'll hook him up. And, as it is with most disappointments, the promise of ice cream makes things a little bit better. Chapter 13. On the ride home from Jump Zone, Amelia types a quick text to the rest of the stand girls to share the good news and ask that they report to work tomorrow at 6 a.m. She reads it aloud for Kate before sending. Kate has feedback. I think it should sound more fun, like an invite to a party. So, more exclamation points? Think ice cream humor. Maybe something about having a sweet scoop on some summer jobs. Ooh, that's cute. You're good. Or maybe, I scream, you scream, we all scream because I got us our jobs back? Kate shakes her head. Okay, no, I like the sweet scoop thing better. But add a winky face, otherwise the girls might not get that it's a joke. And follow up with the 6 a.m. thing separately to each girl after they've already said yes, because if you'd told me that before, I'd still be working at Jump Zone. Kate preemptively ducks, knowing Amelia is going to swat her. By the time they get to Amelia's house, Amelia has received yeses from 5 girls. The 6th response is a no that comes in later, after dinner, when Amelia and Kate are upstairs in Amelia's room. Apparently, Brittany is loving her new job at Sephora. Amelia sets her phone down, stunned. That's a bummer. Can I be honest? Kate bites her bottom lip. I never loved Brittany. Really? Why? Last year, she got super weird about the newbie chores, as if cleaning the bathroom was some personal slight against her. How did I not hear about that? No idea, but it pissed a lot of girls off, especially Heather. During the last week of summer, I swear, Heather was one eye roll away from straight up firing her. Kate shrugs. I say good riddance. We'll get way more hustle out of hiring a third newbie. Amelia can't imagine anyone getting fired from Mead Creamery. She's also reminded that she didn't mention the need to hire newbies to Grady yesterday. Obviously, tomorrow it will be way too crazy to try and train any new girls. But now it can be more than an abstract conversation, because she knows for sure that they're down 3 girls instead of the 2 Amelia thought she'd have to replace. 3 girls adds up to an entire shift. Amelia brought up a plate of snacks with her earlier, some Cracker Barrel cheddar cheese and Ritz crackers, but Kate hasn't touched anything, and the ice is melting in her glass of Coke. What are you doing over there, all secretive? Amelia sits on her knees and tries to peek at Kate's phone screen. Oh, just a little recon on one Grady Patrick Mead. Amelia freezes, her glass of Coke just underneath her nose, the fizz tickling her upper lip. And? I haven't found much yet. His accounts are set to private. Friends only. Another tap or two, and Kate says, Ooh, wait up. This could be something. And then Kate holds her phone high in victory. Yes! Jackpot! Amelia sets her Coke down and, trying not to look too eager, crawls over, asking, Anything interesting? I did a little research on Truman's fraternity chapters. Alpha Kappa Psi is the business one, and Grady's in some of the party pictures. Kate winces at the screen, laughing. Okay, he's still hot, but this is the dorkiest thing I've ever seen.
Kate flips her phone around to show Amelia a photo of Grady Mead standing with five other guys in a line, arms slung around each other's shoulders. Grady is the tallest and the tannest one, the thinnest, too. He doesn't seem skinny in real life, but the other guys are beefy, like rugby players or something. Anyway, they're wearing matching pastel button-up shirts, Madras plaid bow ties, short khaki shorts, and docksiders. Amelia curls up to Kate and takes a closer look. To Amelia, Grady seems so much more relaxed here than he was at the stand with her.
"Isn't it funny to think of me going to parties like this?" Kate says, "full of these rich, fancy people."
Amelia studies the picture. The boys are in someone's backyard, a fancy one with topiaries and a pergola and a huge in-ground pool. Someone who looks like a waiter stands in the background, balancing a tray on one hand.
"Not at all. I feel like this is your destiny."
Kate has always had her sights set on something bigger than Sand Lake. She was the one who advocated tirelessly for their senior class trip to go to New York City. In those 3 days, Amelia's pretty sure Kate never slept. Even at night, when the teachers would put tape over their hotel room doors, Kate would stay awake, watching the city streets from their hotel window. Kate smiles appreciatively.
"I'm actually required to take a bunch of business classes for my science degree. The thinking is that one of us might invent some crazy new medicine or diagnostic tool that could, with the right investors, make us millionaires or whatever. I should get Grady's take on which professors are good and which ones suck."
Amelia sees this as another thing Grady and Kate have in common. They both are able to take a totally intimidating situation and see opportunity for themselves. Kate swipes to another photo, one of Grady at the same party. He's now stripped down to just his swim trunks in the beautiful pool, riding a huge inflatable swan. He's wearing his classic Ray-Ban Wayfarer sunglasses and beaming a bright and toothy smile to the camera. A girl in a metallic bikini clings to him, her head resting against his back, eyes closed.
"So that's his girlfriend," Amelia deduces.
The girl is extremely pretty, tall like a model, with perfectly polished red nails and a cloud of thick black curly hair. Amelia feels a heat prickling inside her ribcage.
"She very well could be, I guess," and Kate wags her finger at Amelia. "She's also the president of the Truman Future Business Leaders Club. I found these pictures through her page."
"Oh," Amelia says, mortified.
"It's okay. Biases are strong as hell, right? But girlfriend or not, I'm sure Grady will try to get with one of our girls this summer."
"Do you think? I mean, he's our boss." Anyway, that's the line in the sand Amelia's tried to remind herself of. Kate shakes her head like Amelia is naive.
"You can't let a fox into the henhouse and not expect some carnage, Amelia. That's why we'll need to make it crystal clear to the younger girls that Grady's completely and totally off limits."
"Yes, completely and totally off limits," Amelia echoes, and hearing herself say it aloud, like a pledge, comforts her. This new rule isn't emotional, it isn't personal. It's simply a sound and solid reason to smother any burgeoning interest she may have for Grady. Beyond, of course, his ability to successfully run Mead Creamery. They watch a movie and paint each other's nails, white with little flecks of color to look like sprinkles. Kate showers first, Amelia second, so they won't have to do it in the morning. Kate knows what drawer Amelia's PJs are in, and she helps herself to a matching set of a floral cami and boxers, which Amelia realizes, come to think of it, might belong to Kate. Kate burrows into her nest of blankets on Amelia's floor, while Amelia props herself up with a pillow and begins a to-do list in a notebook.
There's no way I'm going to sleep this early, Kate says. I don't think I've fallen asleep before 10 since I was in diapers.
It's important we get our rest.
Then put your notebook down.
I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get everything done tomorrow. We'll only have 5 hours.
We won't get everything done, Kate says, matter of fact. And so what? It's not like Grady will know the difference. Plus, we can always catch up after opening day.
That's true.
And you know, if you think about it, some of the chores we had to do to prep the stand were kind of bogus. Like, rake the dirt? Seriously? I mean, don't get me wrong, I would totally rake dirt, no complaints, if Molly were still alive. But it's not like Grady will know one way or the other.
Kate braids her hair and smiles slyly.
We should really think about how to use that to our advantage.
Amelia looks at her chore list and tries to think about what else could or should be changed. She's sure there's something, though nothing jumps out at her. She puts down her notebook, clicks off the light, and closes her eyes. Despite her protests, Kate's out quickly, and if they didn't have to be up super early, Amelia might poke her awake and make a joke about it. Amelia wants to fall asleep herself, but has the sense she won't anytime soon. It probably wasn't smart to think about the stand before bed. It's got her all anxious. She picks up her phone. After turning the brightness down on the screen, she does a little digging on Grady Mead herself. Purely from a business standpoint, of course. She finds an article in the Truman Alumni News featuring Grady and his dad. There's a picture accompanying it, and it's the complete antithesis of the ones Kate found on the fraternity account. This shot is sober, corporate, constructed. Grady is wearing a white-collared shirt and a Truman blue tie knotted tightly around his neck. He's standing next to his father, who's behind a huge mahogany desk inside a rich-looking library, wearing the same tie but a different shirt. Neither smiles. Recalling the awkward exchange between them outside the stand, Amelia suspects this is the reason why Grady's social media is on lockdown. The article states that Grady's father is a big-time businessman and one of Truman's most famous and successful alumni. His career took off when he was barely 20, and he began constructing his own billboards out of scrap lumber and placing them on his parents' property. He'd sell advertising to local businesses, used the money to lease more land on neighbors' property, and sell more ads. When asked whether retirement might be in his future, his answer is, "I don't think that's going to be possible. Everywhere I look, I see the potential to make money. That's the lens I'm always wearing." In a closing sentence, there is a mention of Quinn Greenfield Mead. Amelia cuts and pastes the name into a new search. Before she can stop herself, she's scrolling through Grady's mom's photo stream, looking at different birthdays, never a homemade cake, always celebrated at a restaurant, and holidays. St. Patrick's Day seems big for them, which isn't surprising, and vacations, several ski trips, one Hawaiian resort, what looks like an Alaskan fishing cruise, the Harry Potter theme park, all going back to when Grady was 7 years old. Quinn's pictures are mostly of Grady and herself. Many shots don't include his dad, even on Grady's high school graduation day, which took place around this time last summer. There's a selfie of Quinn tucked underneath Grady's arm in his cap and gown. She's done up beautifully, in a white sheath and matching white cardigan with pearl buttons, her hair perfectly blown out in soft, bouncy curls. Grady looks all Mead DNA. Amelia doesn't see much of Quinn in him. She squints and brings the phone screen closer. Maybe the brows. They both have great brows. Chapter 14. If Amelia could warn Kate's future college roommate about anything, it would be that she's the absolute worst at mornings. Once Amelia's awake, she's ready to go at full power. But the earlier Kate is dragged out of bed, the more time she needs to ease into things. Amelia has learned over the years that waking Kate up is a process. You have to give her ample time and space to look at her phone, to slowly join the living. Rushing only makes her crabbier and slower. Today, that means setting a series of alarms every 10 minutes